Football is a universal language. He literally picked up the ball, he threw it at me, and he said, "Bazi," meaning play in English. This is before I knew that there was a huge segregation between men and women, but he didn't care. I didn't know. Iran was a brand new world. I did not have much background about the laws and the fact that women are not treated with respect and dignity in a lot of the cases. What I did see was that women were brave, women were strong, women wanted to be involved in football. That was a fun moment in history for Iranian women's soccer after the revolution. Women didn't play for about 30, 40 years.
You're listening to the Helpful Podcast, the show that inspires high performers to keep on pursuing their passions. I'm Vahid Josey, and I sit down with accomplished individuals asking who helped them in their tough times, the lessons they learned, and how they're making an impact. You'll hear authentic stories of vulnerability, of people giving when they have nothing to gain, of how you can unlock the community support you need. My next guest is different. She's a founder, but of a women's national soccer team. She moved to a new country, barely knowing the language, and had no shortage of tough times. She later became the captain, coach, and the founder of the under 19 women's national soccer team. If all of that was not enough already, she helped women soccer players flee the Taliban insurgency. And none of this was her day job. Kat Kasturiar is a living legend, and here's her tale of human helpfulness. Hey, Kat, how are you?
I'm doing well, Bagley. It's been such a long time.
Yeah, we met, I don't know, a decade ago, and we've been in contact a few times, but it's been a few years since we chatted. How you been?
Thank God for LinkedIn and the other social media platforms. I get to keep up with you that way.
You're busy. You're never really in one location. You're doing so many things. My head spins when I try to just keep track.
Yeah, you're not the only one whose head spins. I think my family and friends are just sick and tired of wondering where I am. I've shared my geolocation with them, so they know where I am at all times.
Do you remember this app called Foursquare?
Yeah.
So I still check in everywhere I go. It's apparently an archaic thing to do because nobody does it. I mostly do it because it syncs with my calendar. So if I want to be like, all right, Tuesday, 4 years ago on this month, like, where was I? I can easily know it. Basically, a lot of families and friends are just signed up to that notification. Okay, he's here.
That's a lot of dedication on your part.
It's become like a muscle. But I can tell you, I can't surprise my family anymore. Just show up because they actually see where I've been. They're like, okay, yeah, he's about to open the door.
They must be so happy about that too, with those notifications.
It's a double-edged sword, I would say. They're happy when I'm getting close to them, and they're not happy when we're like, oh, he's not coming yet.
Well, maybe I need to download that app again too.
You'd just be bombarded with my check-ins, but yeah, it'd be fun. Kat, for the folks who don't know you, give a short bio. I'm pretty sure they would love to get to know you.
Hello to all of the old and new listeners of his incredible podcast. I'm Kat Kasturiar. I am American-Iranian, and I was born in Tulsa, Oklahoma. For those of you that don't know where it is, it's right in the middle of the U.S. It's known for was the oil and gas capital of the world back in the day, which is why my family immigrated from Iran to the U.S. to work in that field. But little did they know that this five-year-old cat would be so interested in playing soccer that I ended up slowly making my way into the soccer world in the U.S. all the way until when I was 17, when I decided to travel to Iran for the first time to see family just for a two-week vacation. And then I noticed that there was no women's football in Iran. And long story short, I decided to stay in Iran and help developed the very first women's national team, which then ended up pivoting towards creating women leagues, academies, younger youth national teams, coaching, education, and also building a strong federation for women to have access to football. I was a captain of the national team. I became the head coach of the under 19 national team, where we were very successful in Asia and in Europe. Being an American-Iranian, I wanted more people, more diaspora to also join this movement. So I had a lot of players from Europe, from I think it was Holland and Germany and Sweden, as well as a few players from the U.S. also join so they can be a part of this beautiful game and play for the Iranian national team. And I'm now back in the U.S. working in a completely different industry. I'm in the petrochemical and chemical industry, but my passion is always going to be women's football, and I will do whatever I can to my last breath to help women.
That's such a unique story. Honestly, when I met you and I understood what you've done, this is a 0 to 1 moment that like there wasn't something and now there is something. Like, there's so many angles to it when you say empowerment or expression. There's so many. And I can only assume how tough it was. It's like you were 17. You just came back to Iran.
I came back. It was my first time there.
Wow.
I didn't speak a word of Farsi. And I'll say this one funny story real quick was that my teammates, they took it upon themselves to teach me all the bad words, but they made me believe it was actually good words that I'm saying. So the first time I was meeting the Minister of Sports, I apparently was cussing at him in the worst way possible. But I felt so proud of myself that I am saying something so good. And then my teammates are laughing and I see on the minister's face, he's very disgruntled and upset. And he's, what is she saying? And yeah, so from then on, I had to learn Farsi. So it was a quick turnaround.
That's brilliant. So much respect to your teammates. My God. Yeah. You hear about a prank or two here and there, but setting you up in front of a delegation, that's awesome. I hope you gave them a medal for this.
Oh, yeah. We became really good friends afterwards.
I'm sure you have a lot of these stories, but I would love to learn about a time when things were really tough. You were not sure how you're going to actually change the situation. And a helping hand showed up and took you out of it.
There are so many monumental moments in everyone's lives. And mine primarily revolved around football at such a young age. Everyone wants to make it to the national team. Everyone wants to get those scholarships for university, or they want to have their huge break in the European League. When I came to Iran, I let go of my scholarships. I let go of a few big chances that I had to play in Europe so I could put my attention to Iranian women's soccer. But it was not easy. It was not easy at all, because here I am immersing myself in a culture and in a country that I know nothing about. I remember the first 2 months we were training prior to the Western Asian Games that was going to happen in Jordan. And I was going to give up. There was no way, because I never played with hijab before. It was difficult. We were training in the summer heat in Azadi Stadium. And though the water, they would bring it to us, it was hot. We were wearing polyester clothing that was like long and loose, and nothing about this was easy. And I remember I told my family that there's nothing in me. I have nothing in me to continue this. Like, I want to go back to the U.S. I had a perfect life there. Why am I even bothering with this? And they didn't really say anything. They didn't give me any advice. They just listened and said, go back to training the next day. The next day when I went there, I went in a little earlier, and then one of the workers, he probably had the highest education, like second grade. He was Afghan living in Iran, and with his broken Farsi, he was trying to tell me to get up and to start training and playing with him. And he would throw the ball at me, and then I would do chest traps or head the ball back, and we would start playing together. And he used a dictionary that he has. He's like, I'm trying to learn English. And he was like, do you like to play women's football in Iran? And I said, no. And he said, Iran women's football needs you. You need to stay. I had tears running down my face, because I'm like, how did he know that I was wanting to go and I wanted to just put my hands up in the air and move back to the U.S.? How did God put this man in my life who didn't speak good English, but tried to communicate with me between, I think they speak Dari in Afghanistan. So Dari, which I obviously didn't understand. So between Dari and broken English, he was able to communicate with me with full passion, full of heart to stay and to help women in Iran. And that right there just completely blew me away. I remember that morning in training, I was a whole different person. I'm usually the jokester of the team, but I was having such a good time with my teammates that morning. And I came back and he looked at me like a proud father clapping for me, and he gave me cold water. After that, this man became a huge figure in my football career in Iran, and he still works there today. I still have conversations with him, and he's been such a huge help for me, for my career. my football career in Iran and helping me with that initial transition of from moving from the US to Iran.
That's beautiful. So you literally had somebody on the sidelines cheering you on.
Yeah, I did, from the sidelines. I talk about it.
That's beautiful. Other than his passion, how did he reach into your heart?
Football is a universal language. He literally picked up the ball, he threw it at me, and he said, "Bazi," meaning play in English. And I was like, okay. And this is before I knew that there was a huge segregation between men and women. Men cannot play with women on the field, but he didn't care. I didn't know. And he was throwing the ball at me just so I can pass it back to him. And we're just having a great time, a great laugh. I nutmegged him and he got pretty pissed. Then he nutmegged me, or I let him, just for him picking up that ball and was like, play with me. That was a significant approach to what happened later on. But his style of just embracing me as a foreigner who is also Iranian, and him being able, trying to communicate with me with the best of his knowledge, like literally opening up an English dictionary and finding word by word what he wants to say. And then after a few months, he's able to speak better English. He's now can put like sentences together. And then 5 years later, she was able to actually communicate with me. Then 10 years later, we were only speaking in English with each other. So this man really dedicated all those years and all that time in learning English so we could have better conversations together.
I've known you for a while and I never knew this story.
One of the stories that it stays quite close to me. I've spoken to him about it once on stage, and I just couldn't stop crying that I had to get off the stage. That's why I don't talk about it that much.
Was he at that talk you were giving?
No, he was not. It was in the U.S., the talk.
Would you have been able to give that talk if he was in the audience?
No, I would not. I could definitely try, but I don't think I would have lasted more than a couple minutes.
That's so beautiful. So that's at the time that you were a player in the team. You also had a hand in creating the actual national team. How did that go? Like the difficulties that you might have faced, I can't even imagine.
My family works with me from a very difficult industry. And there are so many ebbs and flows in this energy business that you're literally being punched by Muhammad Ali on a daily basis. If you can come home with a smile on your face, you did well that day. We learned from a very young age to have thick skin and to be very adaptable to the circumstances. Iran was a brand new world. I did not have much background information about what country and like the laws that I'm coming into as far as like the Islamic side, and the fact that women are not treated with respect and dignity in a lot of the cases. What I did see being in Iran was that women were brave, women were strong, women wanted to be involved in football. They knew all the players around the world. Whether it's a 5-year-old girl, a 20-year-old, or an 80-year-old woman who has all these grandkids, wants to go out while she's making DZ, which is one of my favorite foods. She's also throwing like a volleyball or a football at her grandchildren or playing with them. So I noticed quickly that women are a huge integral part of the family life. They're not put to the side like a lot of other countries in that region. So when I first got to Iran, my task was to travel across Iran and start talking about women's soccer, start finding players, start hosting camps and little academies and watching players and train them at least for a couple of days to see who would want to be playing football or soccer for the national team. And then maybe later on at different stages, those other players could be playing in the league. That is how we actually started finding players. And when I became the head coach of the national team, the same method was used. I was traveling to every rural area, the villages. One of my players, I found she comes from a family of shepherds. And she did not wear shoes, didn't like to wear shoes. She had hands. If you put two hands of mine together, that was one of her hands. I'm like, you are going to be my goalkeeper. But she was short, but she could jump. And she became one of the best goalkeepers of Asia. She also wouldn't wear football shoes. It took me the longest time to convince her she has to wear cleats. But going back to your original question, I was heavily impacted by women of Iran. And I didn't just stay in Tehran. Like I was traveling to the Kurdistan region, the Azerbaijan region, Sistan, Baluchistan, I was going everywhere, even Kesh Island and Kish, just to find players for any woman who's interested in playing. And I would hold camps the ones that would pass the test, you know, they would come to the national team training grounds and, you know, do another trial. And then from there, you pick like 23 players. No village was left unturned.
How long did it take to actually assemble a whole team? And how long did it take for this team to like gel together?
It took a minute. But the very first Iranian national team, it needed to happen within 6 weeks before we had to travel to Jordan for the very first tournament. And in those 6 weeks, so many players were coming and going. It was like 4,000 players. And then I was fortunate to be selected, and I was a starting 11 player. And we had a few of the Iranian diplomats that came with us, men diplomats. And you had like the Jordan national team, that their sponsor was Nike. And then you had Bahrain and Syria and Lebanon. Like, everyone looks great. They were suited up. The girls had like their hair braided. Like, it was really like legit, very badass to watch women in that region play soccer. So these Iranian diplomats, they were looking at us and like, oh no, they've only started a few weeks ago. We're going to be an embarrassment. These women don't know how to play football. So you would see these officials hiding on the corner of the stadium, not wanting to talk to anybody. And so when the starting whistle blew and we were playing so well together, we realized that we were actually a really good team. We have all our set plays and tactics, and we were passing, we're running, we're tackling, we're scoring. One goal becomes two, two becomes 10. And we were ripping the field. And all of a sudden you see these officials hiding in their chairs and slowly getting up and cheering for us. That was a fun moment in history for Iranian women's soccer after the revolution. I think women didn't play for about 30, 40 years, and then they started playing.
I'm in awe right now. So you joined the team with the help of a guardian angel.
I stayed on the team. I stayed to be a part of it.
Then you ended up running the team. Then what happened?
When I became the head coach, I never wanted to be a coach. That was never part of my wish or my goals or what I wanted to do. But people kept asking me about it. Players kept asking me, that we would love to continue having you a part of our system somehow. And you're so good with how you deliver the education side of football. So I decided to agree. And actually, it took 6 years to get my FIFA A license. So imagine, while I'm studying for my master's in chemical engineering, I'm traveling to Korea, to the UK, to Australia, to all these countries. And like, each time I left, it was like a month of training courses. And I got my A license finally. But still, that wasn't enough for the Football Federation. I needed to have experience. So I started as the second or third assistant coach. And then it took about 5 years until the Federation finally accepted that I'm ready as an American Iranian to coach the Iranian under-19 national team. And boy, did we kill it in Asia. We were awesome. And I was the first woman to be allowed to have men a part of my technical team. For those of you who don't know Persepolis, it's one of the top teams of Iran, and they wear mainly red, but their former captain, who is like a saint in football in Iran, his name was Hossein Abdi. He was my technical director. And then our goalkeeper coach, Habib, he was from Mazandaran, and he was also part of my technical staff. And we had such a good interaction, great communication. We fight, we'd argue with each other, but all of that fighting and arguing was to come up with the best strategy of how to win, how to beat these teams that have so much investment, they have so much attention drawn towards them. Their sponsors are constantly paying for their trips to travel to play against the best teams in the world. And here we are with a couple games under our belt. We're like, all right, let's go play, everyone. Play against Korea. And we ended up playing such a good game against Korea, where even the Koreans at the end were like, you guys were tough to beat. Typically, Iranian national teams will lose, the women's side will lose like 10-12-0. I think we lost only 1-0. And we had so many chances to score. But the very first game I had with the Iranian national team, it was against Belarus. And they were a top European team. They were in the Euros. They're constantly on the top of the ranking. And we beat them 1-0. And a girl from, I think she was from a very small village that they're very religious as well. She's the one that scored our goal. And she had only started playing football 10 months prior to that game. Moral of the story, Iranians and football go hand in hand.
So I personally did not play a lot of football when I was younger. My sport was Taekwondo. And
I remember this.
I remember playing against, unofficially, against some of the women's team. They were definitely better than I was. And it was a little sad to not see them actually get the light of day. Not that I was a good player at all, but they were absolutely better than I was. And I shouldn't have been on the team. They should have.
I'll say that. I'll say that. But thank you, though. Thank you for saying it, though, actually. It means a lot.
This was an honest thought at that point. That's around the same time I'm like, I should not be professional. That's when I got into startups. I was like, all right, I think I can figure out this computer thing. You also helped the women's football team in the region a bunch of different ways. I don't want to fully give away the story because you say it better. So tell us.
I'm going to make a full 360 now. The gentleman who helped me, my guardian angel, he was originally from Afghanistan. Fast forward 15 years later, as we all have seen on the TV, what's happening in Afghanistan, when there was the Taliban insurgency, I called the captain of the Afghan women's national soccer team and I asked, if there's any way that I could help, please let me know. And she followed up and said, we need to get out of here. This is not a safe place for us. And they are looking for us. They're going to cause us a lot of harm and our family a lot of harm. So what can you do? I've never done anything like this before. I didn't even know who to call or who to put together. But being in Texas now, Texas has been a state that it's a small world for me. Everyone knows everyone. Who knew that this one of the most famous women, her name is Joanne King Herring. Actually, Julia Roberts played her in a movie. She's right now 94 years old, everyone. So she was the key to assemble a team together to get the youth national team out to Portugal. Now, the beauty of this is that Portugal is the home of who? Cristiano Ronaldo. And now these girls are playing and they have a second chance. They're surviving. They're alive. And that's what we wanted. But they're also playing football in a country where football is the biggest hobby there. It's a part of their life there as well. So these girls now get access to play there freely and are living their lives. They're working, they're going to school, and they're safe. The 360 of this was that a man from Afghanistan who was at the Azadi National Training Grounds, he was the one that convinced me to stay in Iran to help women there. Fast forward 15 years later, I'm helping the youth national Afghanistan women's team, and I'm helping them come to Portugal. So that's me trying to get back. I just don't want to stop there.
So what's the team doing now? Did you stay in touch with them afterwards when they left?
Oh, yeah. So the captain, her name is Farhunda Mokhtaj. She's actually Canadian Afghan. And I put her in touch with a couple of really good agents, and she's playing in Poland. So she moved from Canada to Poland to be close to the girls in Portugal. And the girls are now all signed to top teams like Sporting, Lisbon, and other teams around the country. They all are going to school. They have access to a system that they never really had back in Afghanistan. The one complaint that they have, though, is that the food is not that tasty, but they say that as a joke. But they're all so happy and supportive of each other. They've created such a strong knit, and these girls are training, I think, every month together under the national team. Oh, during the summer, they went to Sweden for the Gothia Cup as well. It's a beautiful moment in time because these girls, from being in such horrible, dangerous position, they're all now somewhere safe together and have each other's back. And they are like family. They're like, it's like a sisterhood that now they're traveling all over the world. They're sharing their story. And because of the common denominator, which was football, created that safe passage for them. And now they're going to be superstars in the future. That's where they're headed towards.
So now you work in a whole different industry.
I've always been working in a whole different industry.
Do they go overlap at all? Do you still do anything with football?
Yes. So I have a foundation. It's a Women's Equality and Soccer Foundation, where we try to do a lot of coaching education or to players that don't have access to sports bras or to like anything on the hygienic side that they need that they can't get because they're too shy, or maybe the country doesn't provide it for them. We tend to them. So right now it's been a lot more holistic in terms of what I'm doing in women's soccer, but I'm never going to stop in that department. It's always near and dear to my heart. And even in Houston or wherever I travel, if I just pop a show on my LinkedIn, I'm like, hey guys, I'm here. Do you want to do a quick training session? People will always hit me up. I'm like, yeah, come train us. Or come be a guest coach for a top tier team. So that's what I like to do. That's what that's where I'm headed. And it doesn't coincide at all with my work. I love my work right now as well, which is in the chemical and petrochemical side. It's a blessing at the same time as picking my butt and it's giving me my white hairs. But football will always stay in part of my life.
I love this. What help are you always willing to give that folks might not know about?
Time. I give people time and I listen to them. Everyone is always, oh, you're so busy. You become a famous person. It's so difficult to get a hold of you. That's never been true. If you need me, I am there to listen and to help on not any issue that you may have. I've always wanted to be that type of person. If I ever got to a certain level in life, I always wanted to still embrace the fact that I know where I started from. I know how hard it was, but there were always people helping me and holding my hand and listening to me, giving me advice. And I want to be that person now.
Amazing. You might get a lot more direct messages now that you said it, but I'm sure you're going to appreciate
it. I'm good at time management. That's one thing I've learned about myself. I'm good at time management.
Yeah, I spent 2 30-minute sessions max on responding to anything. And I just have a lot of angry friends now, but some of them have learned to just show up or just give me a call. Calling cuts through all of it so far.
Like, you got to be persistent. Everyone's very busy these days. If they can't answer a call for me because they're on another call or messaging, like, I'm quite fast with responding to messages, but I'll always make time for people that matter to me and people that want to be friends. I'm always there.
Yeah, this was such a heartwarming story and all the different parts of it. Just the fact that you accomplished that, you're experiencing struggle, someone helped you, you ended up years later helping others. I don't even know which part to pick as my favorite.
Life is wild and I'm embracing as many moments as possible. The good, the bad, the beautiful, the ugly, all of it. It's all part of the cycle. I'm so honored to be a part of your podcast. I'm so happy that it's with someone that I've known and to see you grow like this and what you want to do and develop, tip my hat off to you.
Thanks, Kat. I appreciate you. Thanks for coming on the pod and hope to see you soon.
Likewise. Thank you for having me.